The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page with the cover story is the executive voice section. The headline, High Speed Mission, how Elif Balkas was chosen to lead Wolf Speed's technology strategy and the role crystals played in her development as a leader. And the executive voice section begins inside the Triangle Business Journal. It's a Q&A column, this one written by Lauren Onasorge. The headline here, Full Speed Ahead at Wolf Speed. Passion for crystals lands Elif Balkas in key Wolf Speed role as the company ramps up. Elif Balkas, the new chief technology officer at Durham-based Wolf Speed, follows a legend, the late CTO and Wolf Speed co-founder John Palmore. She comes on board at a pivotal time as Wolf Speed works to get a mega factory in Chatham County up and running. The next generation materials coming off Wolf Speed's lines can power everything from power grids to electric vehicles. Competition is growing, and scaling to meet the contract needs of big automakers is complicated, as the crystals Wolf Speed makes require a delicate process. For Balkas, it's an invigorating challenge and the culmination of a lifelong fascination with the crystals. Balkas grew up in Turkey, a child of a geologist who would bring home all sorts of crystals, rocks. She remembers being fascinated by the colors and the minerals. In school, she excelled in math and physics. She was strong in chemistry. But the crystals were a passion. Balkas came to the United States to study semiconductor materials, specifically wide bandgap semiconductors, growing the crystals that could power the future. Her doctorate program was at NC State University, studying gallium nitride crystal growth at the same school where Palmore once researched the exact same thing in his laboratory, the project that would become Cree and now Wolf Speed. Balkas pondered academia, teaching material sciences to future generations. But through those years, I realized the application part of it is very attractive to me, she says. So after school, her first job took her to a Virginia startup, Intrinsic Semiconductor. Being young, I was looking for big cities, Balkas says. And within a few years, that startup was acquired by Cree, bringing her back to the Triangle 16 years ago. It's come full circle for Balkas. Her father collected crystals for years, and now she is growing them with the help of a team of scientists. He's super proud, she says of her father. He says all the good things. But the crystals growing in Durham don't occur naturally like what Balkas' father studied. It requires high temperatures, think 2,500 degrees. It's complex to create, and that's part of the problem in scaling. Over the years, Wolf Speed has become adept at growing the material. Balkas says the new facility Wolf Speed is planning in Chatham County could be a game changer. Right now, there's more demand out there than Wolf Speed can possibly deliver on, and it keeps coming. We want to serve that market, so we're kind of in a big hurry, she says. How can STEM fields attract more women? Encouragement goes a long way. I recommend encouraging your friends, relatives, and colleagues to pursue STEM fields that they are passionate about and then continue to support them in their journey. How do you de-stress? Exercise, play sports, or cooking? What's something that might surprise colleagues about you? I love mixing pigments in oil to create colors and paint on canvas, and I want to be a captain of a sailboat one day. How would you describe your leadership style? I believe in impactful and authentic leadership, knowing that it's not just about me as a leader, but about the collective team and how I can best support them. I like to identify my principles, bring stability and presence to the team, and practice daily self-reflection to identify areas where I can perform or assist my team better. What book should every technologist read? Oh, there are many, but I really like this recent book called Curious Minds by Perry Zern and Danny S. Bassett. What's your go-to vacation spot? Exuma, Bahamas, the warm sun, white sand, and clear waters can't be beat. What's been a big obstacle in your career, and how did you overcome it? years ago during 200 millimeter qualification, we were facing a lot of difficult technical challenges, plus the pressure to deliver revenue. We didn't have time to focus on R&D and building the next generation innovation, despite how important we felt it was to our business. We brought different teams and talents together to identify how we could make this work and meet all the needs of the business, including R&D, and we were able to overcome that challenge together. What's a big misconception about the semiconductor space? That anybody can make silicon carbide semiconductor materials and build devices on them. It's really, really hard. We have 35 years of learning cycles under our belt, so we know what we're doing. I don't think other companies just getting into the space realize how hard it really is. Why is Wolfspeed betting on big silicon carbide? Why is Wolfspeed betting big on silicon carbide? Silicon carbide technology and devices represent a once-in-a-lifetime technology shift. The superior performance of the material unleashes new possibilities and positive changes to the way we live and impact all industries. We have been the original champions of this technology since 1987, and we have no intention of stopping. 10 years from now, what do you hope to be able to say about Wolfspeed's technology? That we changed the world for the better and helped usher in a new era of energy efficiency that supports meeting global sustainability goals. And in a little section called A Closer Look, age 45, family, married, 3 children, hometown, Ankara, Turkey, education, PhD, NC State University, material science, electrical and computer engineering, first job, waited tables at a pizza restaurant in high school. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, A Quick Glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. NC State weighs changes to iconic Brickyard. A proposed master plan for NC State University's campus that could tweak the beloved Brickyard has raised concerns by a Washington, D.C. group dedicated to preserving impactful landscapes. In 1966, NC State used red and white bricks to pave a part of campus officially called University Plaza. It has been the scene of many iconic moments, including celebrating the Wolfpack's 1983 national championship in men's basketball. A master plan, developed after an extensive process with input from a wide variety of stakeholders, is looking to reinforce NC State's culture and sense of place while also enhancing the experience. Key hubs, including the Brickyard, would get extra attention. The school's Board of Trustees will review the plan in April. Tom Skolnicki, NC State's University landscape architect, says the Brickyard's vibe has changed since the expansion of the Tally Student Union and the demolition of Harrelson Hall in 2016. Harrelson had 58 classrooms, so students spilled out onto the Brickyard. That drove a lot of energy in the Brickyard, he says, so how can you bring back some of that energy and vibrancy to the Brickyard? The new $180 million Integrative Sciences Building is scheduled to open on the Brickyard in 2027. Meanwhile, NC State is looking at regrading the Brickyard to make it more compliant and replacing the bricks, many of which are chipped or uneven, with new ones in the same colors and patterns. They are really near the end of their service life, Skolnicki says. All this alarms the Washington-based Cultural Landscape Foundation, which fears the loss of the tree canopy and iconic sense of place. CEO Charles Birnbaum says, concerns about changes post-war landscape architecture continues to suffer from a lack of awareness, documentation, and appreciation, leaving vulnerable places like the Brickyard and the Burlington Nuclear Engineering Lab area, which we believe are likely eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places. Skolnicki says NC State has worked really hard to avoid impacting any trees, but a small number will be impacted, he says, if the grading is changed to make the Brickyard more accessible. It is our goal to preserve that overall character, he says. If trees are removed because of construction, we will be looking at how do we plant the next generation of trees. Housing sales cool in the Triangle. The red-hot housing market that marked the last few years is cooling. New numbers out from Triangle Multiple Listing Services show that there were 1,964 closings in the month of January. That's down from the 2,824 the market saw in January 2022. Meanwhile, sellers received 94.7% of their asking price in January, compared to 102% in January 2022. The good news for buyers is there is far more inventory now. Back in January 2022, there were only 0.5 months of inventory, meaning an extremely tight market. Now that number is 1.7. Fly Exclusive opening new hangar. A private jet charter company in Kinston is opening another new hangar, this time aimed at expanding its maintenance, repair, and overhaul capabilities. Fly Exclusive is looking to bring more of its maintenance duties in-house and using this new 9,500-square-foot hangar to do so. The company made headlines last year when it announced it was going public through a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC. The company says it's on track to record $522 million in revenue this year, making it one of the largest companies in Eastern North Carolina. High earners feel the pinch. More people earning higher incomes are feeling an economic blow. A recent survey found half of Americans earning $100,000 or more are living paycheck to paycheck. Overall, the figure is more than 6 in 10 Americans, up 3 percentage points from December 2021. But for high earners, the figure was up 9 percentage points year over year. Former BioAgilytics CEO lands new role. The former CEO of a Durham contract research organization is teaming back up with a former investor. London's Global Healthcare Opportunities, a private equity firm whose founders include Dennis Gillings, the former UNC Chapel Hill professor who founded Quintiles, has appointed Jim Dayton as an operating partner. Dayton was CEO of BioAgilytics for nearly a decade before retiring last June. Dayton led the company through a period of significant growth, which included multiple acquisitions, and BioAgilytics in 2020 selecting Durham as its site for a major, roughly $60 million expansion. Global Healthcare Opportunities, or GHO Capital, supported the company's growth after investing in 2018, until the global private equity firm Cinven acquired a majority stake in the CRO in late 2021. Dayton left BioAgilytics a few months later and is now led by Ewan Menzies. GHO Capital's local ties continue through other investments. The firm's portfolio includes Alcami Corporation, a North Carolina contract development and manufacturing organization, and Durham's Velocity Clinical Research. And finally, Duke UNC tickets prices plummet. If you've always dreamed of seeing the Duke Carolina basketball game, this might be your year. UNC might not even make the NCAA tournament after reaching the championship game in 2022, and prices for the home finale against Duke University on March 4 have dropped. Prices for a single ticket are as low as $338 on StubHub. Not exactly cheap, but still modest by Duke Carolina standards. And now we turn to some of the major news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. First article is written by Evan Hoopfer. CSX Corporation scraps plans for new rail yard in Lee County. CSX Corporation is no longer considering making a big land purchase at a site in Lee County and building a new rail yard on the land, a company spokesperson tells Triangle Business Journal. Cindy Schild, a spokesperson for CSX, offered no details about why the Jacksonville, Florida-based rail giant had changed its plans in Lee County. "This was an internal business decision," she says. The move comes as a blow not only to Lee County, but the southern edge of the Triangle that has experienced tremendous growth recently. A little more than a year ago, CSX filed plans with Lee County to rezone 244 acres from residential agriculture to heavy industrial to develop a new rail yard, which likely would have spurred economic activity in the area. Facilities like this operated by Class I Railroad serve as the backbone of the North American logistics industry. Jimmy Randolph, CEO of the Sanford Area Growth Alliance, says his office was notified CSX was scrapping its plans for a rail yard, but not provided any additional details. "We have since fielded some inquiries from others expressing potential interest in the site, but nothing has materialized yet," Randolph says. Property records show CSX never purchased the land, which has an appraised value of $496,300 and sits south of Triangle Innovation Point. This decision by CSX comes at a time when business is booming for railroads. Reporting its 2022 earnings recently, CSX said that revenue, net earnings, and earnings per share were all up compared to 2021. This isn't the first time CSX has canceled plans for a new facility in the Greater Triangle. In 2016, CSX identified a location in Johnston County for a new terminal. State and local leaders praised the project as an economic win for the area. But soon after the project was announced, homeowners organized and tried to turn public sentiment against the proposed terminal. Eventually, the company relented and instead settled on a new site in Edgecombe County. And our next article is written by Lauren Onasorge. Pappas targets renewable energy. Durham firm makes first investment in renewable sector. Venture capital firm Pappas Capital has closed on its first investment in a renewable energy sector, but it's not deviating from the mission. That's according to the Durham firm's founder, Art Pappas, speaking after the firm announced an investment in Singapore-based V-Flow Tech. For Pappas Capital, whose portfolio companies have pushed out 25 U.S. Food and Drug Administration-approved drugs over the years, it's just a different angle to the mission, Pappas says. We see it as having an application at some point in healthcare, he says. Pappas says, sees the battery technology that V-Flow Tech is developing as having a very unique application to hospitals, medtech, all sorts of things. The latest investment, part of an overall $10 million raise by V-Flow Tech, is out of Pappas Capital's Asia Innovation Fund, which closed in 2021. The fund is Pappas Capital's vehicle to tap into next-generation innovation coming from places such as China, Hong Kong, and Singapore. The fund targets a slew of what Pappas labels disruptive technologies, from quantum computing to, in the case of V-Flow Tech, battery storage, all with applications in healthcare. V-Flow Tech manufactures what it calls power cubes, a type of rechargeable flow battery with 25-year lifespans. The V-Flow Tech deal is the third investment from the Asia Fund. In the next few months, Pappas Capital likely will be up to six companies out of the fund, including two from China, where geopolitical tensions are rising. Papa says it's something the firm is concerned about. We're watching how that is all going to play out, but we have been able to put money to work, he says. We are cautious watching how things are going to sort out as we make decisions. Meanwhile, in the U.S., Pappas Capital launched its sixth flagship fund last year and is currently conducting due diligence on what will likely be the first investment in that portfolio, Pappas says. Luxury builder charts more new townhomes near Crabtree Mall. This is written by Kaylee Thompson. A local home builder has closed on land in northwest Raleigh with plans to build townhomes that start in the mid-400,000s. Baker Residential, a luxury home builder in Cary, acquired 10.6 acres at 4008 Laurel Hills Road for $5 million on January 9, according to Wake County Deed Records. The company plans to build Park, spelled P-A-R-C, at Laurel Hills, a 63-townhome project not far from Crabtree Valley Mall. Tim Lance, Baker Residential Vice President of Sales and Marketing, says there will be two types of townhomes, with one being a new product the home builder is offering. There will be 42 18-foot-wide lots with townhomes that are the same as at Park at Edwards Mill, located across Edwards Mill Road from Laurel Hills Road. These will have three bedrooms, a one-car garage, have two stories, and be 2,100 square feet. Pricing will start in the mid-400,000s. The new product is a 26-foot-wide lot, and there will be 21 of these. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page. That's written by Evan Hoopfer. Mudcats may leave their Zebulon home. Baseball team Ways move to new park proposed in Wilson. The Carolina Mudcats are considering leaving Zebulon and heading to Wilson to join what could become a new development with the potential to transform the community in eastern North Carolina. The Mudcats and the city of Wilson have entered into a memorandum of understanding to explore potential sites for a new baseball stadium that would be part of a larger development. Multiple locations are being considered, the city says, both downtown and outside of downtown. The exact sites were not disclosed. A new baseball stadium in Wilson could be a major economic development catalyst for the community of 48,000 people. The current trend for sports stadiums is to surround them with retail and residential development, and Wilson officials say the city would pursue that strategy for its new ballpark. The city works hard to create recreation, entertainment, redevelopment, and economic development opportunities for our community, Wilson City Manager Grant Going says. It is extremely rare for a single project to contain each of those elements, but this one does. The MOU between Wilson and the Mudcats, approved by the City Council February 16, directs city staff to work with the Mudcats to form a more definitive plan for a new ballpark. The MOU is non-binding. The Mudcats, the single-A affiliate of the Milwaukee Brewers, have played at Five County Stadium in Zebulon since 1991. The Mudcats originally sought to come to Raleigh, but were blocked by a minor league baseball rule where an existing team, in this case the Durham Bulls, could prevent a team from moving within 35 miles of its park. Wake County and the town of Zebulon are expected to put up a fight to keep the team. In a joint statement, the local government says their goal is to reach a financially responsible agreement to renovate Five County Stadium. We understand that the Brewers are looking at other locations for the Mudcats to play, the statement says. We believe that with improvements to our facility, Five County Stadium and the Mudcats can continue their rich history for many years to come. Historic Goldsboro home could become a bed and breakfast. The Goldsboro City Council recently heard preliminary plans to turn a historic home at 300 South William Street into a bed and breakfast. More fleshed out site plans need to be presented to the City Council before the move could receive final approvals. The home features over a century of history within Goldsboro. As Wayne County property records show, the house was built in 1896. The 127-year-old home was sold for $132,000 in January 2022 to Rebecca Lucero and Andrew Thomas Seaver, according to Wayne County property records. And finally, dozens of new estate homes planned. New estate lots are coming to Johnston County as the area continues to swell with new residents and developments. DRB Homes purchased 59.11 acres in Johnston County for $1.7 million, according to a deed filed February 10. The land sits along Powhatan Road between Clayton and Wilson's Mills. On the land, DRB Homes is planning a new community called The Laurel, which will feature 46 new lots, says Jay Colvin, director of land acquisition for the company. Families living in or moving to the Clayton area looking for a large home site without sacrificing convenient access to services are going to be attracted to this community, Colvin says. And now we turn to the page written by Lauren Onisorge on tech and aviation. Avalo adds flights, staff, and expansion. Houston Airline adds routes to Florida, expects more to come. On February 16, Avalo Airlines inaugural Raleigh-Durham International Airport service to Fort Myers, Florida, took off out of Terminal 1 at 7 a.m., but the launch was a bigger deal than flying to Florida. It also marked the official opening of Avalo's crew base at RDU. Avalo Chief Operating Officer Greg Baden said the airline has hired more than 50 people so far for the operation, from pilots to flight attendants to ground handlers. Baden, visiting the airport February 15th, said it's the first big investment, but likely not the last. The plan is to bring in a second plane, which would mean more destinations and more jobs. You go in with the full expectation that you're going to have a second airplane, Baden said. Avalo has been encouraged by its sales. In addition to its existing route to New Haven, Connecticut, Avalo has seen plenty of buzz around its new offerings in Florida, Fort Myers, Fort Lauderdale, Tampa, Sarasota, Orlando, and West Palm Beach. We're excited about advanced sales, and that is the kind of momentum that leads to the second aircraft, he said. For me, I think it's a matter of when, not if, but that's unofficial. I'm rooting for it. Expectations are high at RDU, where airport CEO Mike Landguth pointed to Avalo's fast growth. In May of 2022, they had one flight. Go 12 months later, they have six new flights added, so they see a tremendous opportunity for growth, he said. Just do the math. Records detail NC's pursuit of aerospace. Newly released records show aerospace recruitment is top of mind for North Carolina. The North Carolina Department of Commerce, in response to a records request from last year, provided a copy of Commerce Secretary Michelle Sanders' itinerary for the Farnborough Air Show held last July outside London. The show was an opportunity for Sanders and other state officials to interact with aerospace prospects, and the itinerary shows a jam-packed schedule over the course of a few days. The first economic development meeting on the agenda was with executives including Boom Technologies President Kathy Savitt on July 18. Boom recently broke ground on what's expected to be a supersonic jet plant near Greensboro. British aerospace components maker Meggitt was also on the first day agenda. The company's general counsel was present to meet with Sanders. Sanders also met with representatives from Boeing, Pratt & Whitney, and Ontic Engineering on the first day. And our last article, Spiffy adds cash and an IPO could be next. With a new $30 million funder, an exit may soon be in the cards for car care startup Get Spiffy. The round, announced February 15, was led by Edison Partners with participation from existing investors Tribeca Venture Partners, Bull City Venture Partners, Idea Fund Partners, Trog Hawley Capital, Adinger, and Private Access Network. Shell Ventures, Goodyear Ventures, and Mann and Hummel also participated. Large finance rounds can bring exit speculation, but CEO Scott Wingo isn't biting yet. We haven't really put ourselves out there, Wingo says. Step one is to build a great company, but an acquisition or a public offering could be in the future, he adds. Oh, and actually we do have one more short story on this page. Spitz takes new role at PE firm. 3 months after Morrisville-based Channel Advisor was bought out by Commerce Hub, its former CEO has a new job. David Spitz's LinkedIn profile now lists his role as operating manager director at Vista Equity Partners, a private equity firm based in Austin, Texas. Vista confirmed the hire but declined to make Spitz available for an interview. Spitz, who was one of multiple executives subject to golden parachute provisions tied to the Commercial Hub deal, joined Channel Advisor in 2006. And now we can turn to Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and higher education. ICVIA to leave iconic tower in Durham. Tower off I-40 marked the rise of Quintiles as clinical research giant. A prominent Durham office tower is available for sublease as one of the Triangle's largest life sciences companies is reducing its office footprint in the region. ICVIA is looking for a subtenant to take over its headquarters building at 4820 Emperor Boulevard, overlooking Interstate 40, as the company consolidates its Research Triangle Park area employees to a single facility in Durham. The company's move out of the nearly 260,000-square-foot tower is scheduled to take effect by mid-year. In a statement, an ICVIA spokesperson said the company is not planning any changes to its RTP workforce in connection with the move. This relocation is an effort to provide employees with one location to work together with greater opportunity for connectivity and improved amenities while creating jobs and remaining committed to expanding in the Research Triangle area, ICVIA said. Quintiles opened the building in 2009, and the huge Q on the side was a symbol of the might of the company's a company Dennis Gilling started from scratch. But Quintiles merged with IMS Health in 2016, and the company became ICVIA, led by former IMS Health CEO Art Busbib. After years of courting potential buyers, the building's previous owner sold it in late 2020 to a California real estate group for nearly $90 million, but ICVIA continued to lease the entire space. It likely will be difficult to find a single tenant to sublease most or all of the space in the building, given the current lack of demand for large office space. Data from Triangle Business Journal's space publication shows the Triangle had nearly 4.2 million square feet of available sublease space in Q4 2022, a figure that includes everything from office to warehouse. According to Colliers, available sublease space in the Raleigh-Durham office market increased 7.7% in Q4 2022, more than 3 million square feet of space was available, up 46% year over year. ICVIA declines to provide specific numbers on its local headcount, but says the company has nearly 4,000 employees statewide, many of whom will use Innovation Park as their office. Innovation Park is the company's 360,000-square-foot facility at 2400 Ellis Road in Durham. ICVIA opened the facility about 2 years ago. In October 2021, ICVIA subsidiary Q2 Solutions moved into a 160,000-square-foot lab facility on the campus. UNC trustees' proposed school on civic life draws ire of faculty. Faculty members at UNC Chapel Hill are pushing back on a new school proposed by the Board of Trustees that's resulted in the latest clash on the college campus. The Faculty Council on February 17 passed a resolution recommending UNC not pursue the creation of a school of civic life and leadership, an idea pushed by the university's trustees without discussions with faculty leadership. The resolution says faculty are responsible for creating new schools and that they were not involved in this process. The resolution resolution also says faculty members have questions about the vision of the school, including its potential to overlap with existing programs. Additionally, it says the school would use badly needed resources. The council pointed to a budget memo showing the school's expenses totaling about $3.5 million in its first year, fiscal 2023-24, and growing to about $12.7 million by its fourth year. And finally, Wake Med lands approvals for new facilities. State regulators have approved Wake Med Health's plans to invest in two new facilities in Wake County. The health system can develop acute care beds at a $214 million hospital in Garner and a roughly $137 million behavioral health facility in eastern Wake County. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services approved the plans late last month. WakeMed in August applied to develop its WakeMed Garner Hospital by relocating 22 beds from its Raleigh campus and adding no more than 9 new beds. WakeMed plans to move its existing emergency department from its Garner Healthplex into the new facility, doubling its size from 12 to 24 beds. And on the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Brumette, the first headline: Borden Brick Project to expand in Durham. Raleigh City Plat sees opportunity for more hospitality locations. Borden Brick, a recently opened hospitality development, is getting an additional building. City Plat, the development's Raleigh-based owners, have acquired a nearby property with the goal of adding 3 more tenants to its mix. Located at 704 and 706 East Ramser Street, the project is comprised of 3 redeveloped buildings. City Plat purchased the 3 industrial buildings in 2021 and has turned them into a food and beverage hub. Borden Brick is now fully leased, with tenants including Lone Rider Brewing Company of Raleigh, set to open soon, and Mexican restaurant Mezcalito, which is now open. The development's second phase will be located nearby at 618 East Ramser Street. City Plat purchased the property for $4.2 million with plans to use the existing building to house more food and beverage tenants. The property seller, listed as ITAC 424 LLC, had plans to convert the spot into retail space and had started renovations, though they were never completed, Vincenzo Verdino of City Plat says. The building totals about 6,900 square feet with a large outdoor patio and a rooftop deck. The space is split into 3 units set for 3 tenants. We have a number of hospitality tenants that we're currently working with, Verdino says. We're going to activate a little bit more of the exterior there. We plan on doing a permanent food truck concept along with music and events and an outdoor component that will complement the food trucks. He expects the second phase to open within 6 to 8 months, depending on tenant upfitting projects. The firm is eyeing tenants that would complement Borden Brick's existing tenants, including a brewery and daytime food options. City Plat has also been active further down Ramser Street, purchasing 810 East Ramser Street in November and the adjacent 806 East Ramser Street in 2021. The firm is in the process of renovating both buildings and finding tenants. Local Time blends local, international flavors. Local Time Brewing is coming to Holly Springs downtown area at 300 South Main Street. The brewery and tap room is inspired by travel and global cultures and will offer a rotation of 6 to 8 beers brewed on site. Those brews will feature different styles and ingredients both from North Carolina and around the world. Chris and Kelly Gallagher are opening the new spot and have hired Devin Singley, an award-winning brewmaster, to head Local Time's production. The team is eyeing a March opening date, Chris Gallagher says. Local Time will fill a 2,500 square foot space with about 2/3 of the space dedicated to brewing and the remaining 1/3 serving as the tap room. In warmer months, outdoor seating will also be available. The brewery has a 7-barrel production system and about 75 seats, Gallagher says. Local Time plans to host live music, trivia, and private events. Gallagher's plan is to distribute Local Time's beer, but the current focus is on establishing the tap room. And finally, Tuesday morning struggles affect Triangle. Tuesday morning, a chain of discount home goods stores has filed for bankruptcy and will close 6 stores in the area. The only store in the Greater Triangle that is not closing is in Aberdeen. Tuesday morning previously emerged from Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 2021 after closing about 200 stores. The company named a new CEO last November and delisted its stock in December, citing liquidity issues. The company is seeking a financial and operational reorganization as a means to shore up its outstanding liabilities, obtain capital, and evolve into a nimbler retailer, a release says. The petition lists assets and liabilities of $100 million to $500 million. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. The main headline, Kane Realty bets on office comeback. New buildings rise in main district of North Hills development. Kane Realty's transformation of the North Hills main district is pushing forward amid the developer's ongoing talks with the Raleigh City Council regarding the 40-story zoning Kane needs for future developments. Three new buildings are on track to be complete in North Hills later this year at the site of the former JCPenney store, but a key challenge for the Raleigh developer and the $350 million project is the lack of companies seeking large office spaces as remote work has completely changed the commercial real estate sector. The One North Hills building that sits next to the Renaissance Hotel has officially topped out with a target completion date of August. The five-story creative office building and 12-story residential building are pacing to be complete in August and late 2023, respectively. One North Hills is a 10-story office building with 266,000 square feet of space. One North Hills will have a 6,000 square foot outdoor terrace on the 10th floor. Kane Realty CEO John Kane says one floor in One North Hills has been leased to an unnamed office tenant and that there are other prospects for office space in that building. The market has been a little bit slow. There are just not that many big users out there. A lot of 6,000 to 12,000 footers that are circling around, Kane says. But we're betting the market is going to get better by the time the three buildings are ready for tenant upfits. The vacancy rate for Class A office space in the Triangle was above 13% in Q4 2022, up from about 12% in the third quarter, according to Triangle Business Journal's Space publication, and net absorption was negative in the fourth quarter. The creative office building will have 80,800 square feet of office space, along with 20,000 square feet of ground-level retail. Highland North Hills Apartments is the 12-story building with 287 units. It will have a mix of studios and 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom apartments. Kane Realty officials say residents will be able to move in early 2024. Coca-Cola facility could become apartments, retail development. A bottling facility in Durham could be transformed into a new development with apartments, townhomes, a grocery store, and retail space. The Ardent Companies and Atlanta asset management firm has filed a rezoning request with the City of Durham for 3214 Hillsborough Road, site of the Durham Coca-Cola Bottling Company warehouse, to allow for a mixed-use development. The bottling company plans to move its operations to a new facility in Chatham County. The current zoning is industrial light. The requested zoning is for the northern portion of the site to be planned development residential and the southern portion to be commercial general. This stretch of Hillsborough Road is a thoroughfare in the truest sense of the word. People are passing through, says Ardent Executive Director Jay Douglas. What we want to do is create something that creates a sense of place, and a mixed-use project will allow for that. Our goal is to create a first-class experience for those who use this project and help people recognize the value of this corridor and lead to additional reinvestment in the city. Raleigh-Durham ranked as hottest. Raleigh ranks first in U.S. News & World Report's hottest housing markets in the U.S., which was released recently. Denver is second, and Austin, Texas is tied with Durham for third. The report puts Raleigh at the top due to a variety of factors, a relatively affordable monthly mortgage payment-to-income ratio, low unemployment, and a healthy ratio of building permits to employment growth. The U.S. News Housing Market Index looks at three sub-indexes, demand, supply, and financial. The demand index of 73.9 for Raleigh and 69.6 for Durham ranked number 1 and 2, respectively. The national median is 68.5. The housing market index for Raleigh is 71.7, while the national figure is 64.4. As of December, for Durham Chapel Hill, it's 67.3. And finally, commercial market seen as strong. The Raleigh-Durham Metro ranked number 5 as far as the best cities to invest in commercial real estate on MyElisting.com's analysis of the emerging trends in real estate 2023, a report by the Urban Land Institute and PwC. The industrial sector saw a steady increase in rental rates. The analysis reports that the overall industrial market, warehouse, and flex property rate increased to $11.13, a 3.5% quarter-over-quarter increase. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Jobs Market Will Determine Housing's Future. Two things hit my mailbox while I was on a mini vacation. First, the latest report from the Triangle Multiple Listing Services that collated all the local housing-related data into a concise report with commentary. Second, the latest report from the National Association of Realtors, or NAR, details the housing sales trends nationwide. Understandably, the NAR report seems to indicate that the housing market has turned a corner. The group makes its point by showing that while U.S. home sales dropped for 12 straight months, the decline is leveling off. So the NAR makes the point that if sales were dropping 20% last year, it is dropping 15 or 16% now. But they miss the point that it is still dropping. For the Triangle, the TMLS folks list that while sales dropped 30% when comparing last month to January 2022, the overall sales price has started to come down. When comparing December closed sales to January closed sales, TMLS reports prices are down 1% for new homes and 2% for existing homes. The last piece of info is good news, and I think the average sales number will see a bigger drop in the next few months. Why? The labor market. While we are mesmerized by what is happening to the mortgage rates, especially if we are in the market to buy a home, we are simply looking at the trees and not the entire forest. Yes, a downward trend in mortgage rates will make a difference, but in the current state of the economy, does anyone believe rates will fall below 5% in the near term? As of this writing, the rates are hovering around 6.5%. We come back to the labor market, aka jobs outlook. If local companies quickly start pruning their worker bases following a delay or stoppage of their contracts with the country's largest companies, such as Cisco, Google, Boeing, and Walmart, one should see more and more homes being put up for sale in the Triangle. TMLS data show from December to January, there were 56% more homes listed for sale. Now, take that number and double it for the next 3 months. But for argument's sake, keep the mortgage rates around 6 or 6.5%. We are staring at a massive drop in average sales price with the weakening of the jobs market. As we have seen before, the only saving grace of a balanced housing market, supply-demand, will be if the area continues to attract companies relocating here because of lower fixed operating costs and a more satisfying standard of living. But will that be enough? The other thing we may soon start talking about is the foreclosure rate. Because of our economic strength and how the area emerged from the Great Recession, our foreclosure rate in the past decade has been minimal when compared to some parts of the country. But once jobs become scarce, the equation becomes more complex. NAR data suggests U.S. properties typically remained on the market for 33 days last month, up from 26 days in December. In the Triangle, that number was 57, up from 42. Let's not forget, people really don't shop for homes in January, so let's focus on that number in 3 months. Ironically, some of these headwinds may take care of some of these affordability pains with a precipitous drop in overall sales price. But will there be enough buyers by then? The March, April, and May months may show us the blueprint for the rest of the year. And now we'll read the big number sections. These sections are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first big number we have is 100, the number of new jobs that could be added to Bharat Forge's operations in Sanford. The company recently filed plans to build a 150,000-square-foot facility next to its current factory. And this one is more of a number to know, 4. That's the number of new services coming in May from Breeze Airlines out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport. Breeze will fly to Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, and Louisville, Kentucky, plus add what it calls a Breeze-Through service to Norfolk, Virginia, a one-stop service where travelers don't have to change planes. And the next big number, $4.98 billion to $5.18 billion. That's how much Morrisville-based Syneos Health is projecting for its annual revenue this year. And another big number, $73.8 million. That's how much Wake County recorded in hospitality tax collections in 2022, comprised of hotel occupancy tax and a prepared food and beverage tax. The amount sets records for the country, for the county, as tourism and leisure travel are becoming a focus now for the area. And our last big number is $25 million. That's how much Archway Holdings saw as a return on an investment for the Chelsea Apartments, a 280-unit apartment community in Raleigh. Dallas-based real estate company Brazos Residential acquired the apartments for $45 million. And now we'll read through the He Said It sections that are quotes sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first one is from Kelly Miller, owner of Southern Pines Golf Club, on whether his newly approved golf cottages to be built on the course will be ready for the men's U.S. Open, slated to be played at nearby Pinehurst No. 2 in June 2024. Golf cottages like these represent new revenue streams for golf courses and are growing in popularity. We're in it for the long term. The Open will be back in 2029, so I'm sure we'll have it all done by 29. And next, it's Todd Ranz, Elo Life Systems CEO, on the startup's efforts to develop plant-based sweeteners and bananas that are resistant to a fungus that's devastating to the fruit. The company recently closed a $24.5 million financing round, which is supporting its expansion in Research Triangle Park and additions to its 31-person team. We can go find ingredients in nature and put them in other food systems so that we can produce at a whole other scale. And our next quote is from Charlie Coyne, Director of Retail Services at CBRE Raleigh, on the Triangle's retail market. Construction pricing is stabilizing, and we're starting to see a healthy pipeline of new mixed-use and grocery-anchored developments. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read some of the around-the-state news. Miami developer gets Charlotte pushback. Major mixed-use project in South Park raises variety of concerns. This is written by Elise Franco with the Charlotte Business Journal. Miami-based Related Group's mixed-use project in South Park received neighborhood pushback during a public hearing in Charlotte on February 20. Related filed a petition with the City of Charlotte in May to rezone 9.1 acres at Colony, Rexford, and Roxborough Roads and replace the 50-year-old Trianon condominiums with 55,000 square feet of office space, 60,000 square feet of retail, 730 multifamily units, and 18 to 24 townhomes. In December, the developer made significant changes to the plan, eliminating the office component and reducing building heights. The project is expected to cost between $300 and $400 million. Ambrielle Taylor of the Tranum Homeowners Association Board said the decision to sell the aging condo development was not made lightly. Unfortunately, our aging infrastructure creates a physical and financial burden, making it difficult for us to stay long term, she said. Our community chose Related, a developer that would build something special and not just a standard apartment project, while still being considerate of the neighboring residences. Barbara Caldwell, a resident of South Park's Barclay Downs neighborhood since 2005, spoke on behalf of the more than 400 homeowners there. She said Related's plan does not align with the Charlotte Future 2040 policy map. There are multiple arguments against the proposed rezoning, and if council adopts this questionable rezoning after adopting the 2040 plan, after so much valuable city staff time, community debate, and expense, it will sow confusion regarding what the 2040 plan means and reduce trust in city government, she said. Jeff Brown, who spoke on behalf of Related Group, said that while policy mapping is important, there are always exceptions. Brown said the density this project will create at the 9-acre site is comparable to the density that's been happening in South Park for a number of years. He noted that the developer chose to design the building heights based on their location on the property. Those closest to the residences along Wickersham Road will be no more than 48 feet tall, with the tallest of the buildings reaching no more than 164 feet on the side of the land nearest to commercial development. And our next story is from the Triad Business Journal. Revere Copper picks Mebane for new plant. Proximity to customers in the growing electric vehicle market, a strong transportation network, a deep workforce, and a business-friendly state are drawing a New York company with a 200-year history to Mebane. Revere Copper Products has leased the former Prescient building at 2125 Senator Ralph Scott Parkway with plans to employ 30 to 40 people making copper primarily for electrical and electronic equipment. The plant's production is copper bus bar used as a conductor in electrical equipment and components. The privately owned company traces its history back to the Revolutionary War figure Paul Revere, who opened a copper foundry in the 18th century. It once had plants in several states, but the Mebane is its first contemporary foray outside of its base in Rome, New York. Mebane is close to current and potential customers, including ABB, the Swiss maker of industrial electric equipment and systems, which has a facility just off I-85 from 40 in the Orange County portion of Mebane. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll return to the Viewpoint page to read the guest column. And it's written by Marcus Manning, who is the executive director of the Durham Sports Commission. The headline, Youth Sports Create Opportunity. Let's dream. Imagine children waking up in North St. Louis County, Orange County, California, and Durham all had equal access and opportunities to participate in sports. Imagine children waking up in Southside Chicago, Detroit, Shreveport, Louisiana, and South Bend, Indiana, all looking forward to having the opportunity to throw, catch, laugh, cheer, log on, run, jump, balance, hop, dodge, lift, carry, safely fall, and get back up again. Imagine children across the United States being introduced to teamwork, leadership, relationship building, and a sense of community through sport. Imagine these interpersonal skills being a part of every child's daily life. Youth sports help develop all these skills, character traits, and more. Beyond the proven physical benefits of sports, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services found sports provided additional benefits, including developing competence, confidence, and self-esteem, reducing the risk of suicide and suicidal thoughts, and improvements in life skills like goal setting, time management, and work ethic. Having spent more than 20 years working with and on the behalf of athletes, I've seen firsthand how incredibly impactful youth sport participation is in the physical, emotional, social, and mental development of well-rounded adults. Given the potentially limitless benefits of youth sports, ensuring access and opportunities for participation becomes paramount. The National Federation of State High School Associations was able to complete their high school athletics participation survey for the 2021-22 school year and indicated participation in 69 different sports. Carissa Niehoff, CEO of the NFHS, stated, "It is great to see a growing interest in several emerging sports as well as programs like unified and adapted programs." A few of the more popular non-traditional sports included bowling, field hockey, ice hockey, water polo, and weightlifting. As we progress, we must be forward-thinking, intentional, and strategic in providing access and opportunities for kids to get involved and ensure these emerging opportunities are not stymied by exclusionary systems. How can we support and provide pathways to youth sport participation, especially in underserved populations and communities? Sometimes that can be as simple as offering to help offset costs, doing things like donating new and lightly used equipment, or by more targeted efforts like creating grant programs that put funds directly in the hands of those that need it most. This is what the Durham Sports Commission is attempting to do through the One Team, One Durham Fund. Additionally, as interest and participation in other emerging sports like esports, flag football, stunt, and women's wrestling continue to increase and take shape, the avenues to be inclusive, creating new partnerships and opportunities for the benefits of kids to play, are wide open. Finally, focusing on inclusivity, providing opportunities for free and reduced play, the development of new spaces and the revitalization and upkeep of current spaces for formal and informal participation allows for traditional, non-traditional, and emerging sports to grow. Allowing young people to guide us and provide direction lends itself to learning more about what they desire from their sports experience, like having fun. So, dreaming big, what if every young person interested in sports was provided access and an opportunity to participate and have fun? What if? And with our remaining minutes, we'll turn to the small business section to read James Lee's column. James Lee is a family business speaker, advisor, and author. The headline, These Mistakes Derail Successful Successions. Okay, so I'm a little compulsive on the subject of planning for the continuity of family business ownership, like location, location, location in real estate. Planning, planning, planning are the three most important things you can do to ensure the successful handover of your family businesses from one generation to the next. So I have to take a few deep breaths before making this admission. There are times when succession planning just doesn't work. Here are a few caveats to keep in mind as your family business starts the succession planning process. Succession planning doesn't work when it feeds the desires of family members at the expense of the business. The transition from one generation to the next sometimes involves a plan to begin distributing the benefits of ownership, cash, or perks to family members. That can be a dangerous move if family members' desires for a richer lifestyle are allowed to override the need the business has for redevelopment, for development of capital and reserves. Succession planning doesn't work when it reflects little more than the senior owner's personal preferences. While the senior owner is often the key to the success or failure of a succession plan, there's a proven need for objectivity and good business judgment in laying out the plan and implementing it. A good plan provides for the company's stability and growth for many years into the future. Succession planning doesn't work when it makes inadequate provision for the financial needs of the retiring owner and spouse. Several faults can cause a succession plan to ride low in the water. This little oversight is virtually guaranteed to sink it. It would be outside the bounds of rationality for a senior owner to hand over the business, his or her principal financial lifeline, without being certain a comfortable retirement has been established. A mechanism for funding that retirement should be put into place early in the planning process. Succession planning doesn't work when the successors are coerced into coming into the business. Even if the senior owners manage to browbeat the kids into the company, the chances of such an arrangement lasting for more than a few years are slim. Succession planning doesn't work when it focuses on the next CEO to the exclusion of others. When there's more than one person in the rising generation who's capable and ready to take on leadership responsibility, it's important to plan roles for them. Succession planning doesn't work when it's done in the dark. A family business should be a family affair with business participation in, or at least awareness of, its operation. And finally, succession planning doesn't work when the senior owner doesn't follow through with a timely transfer of responsibility and authority. These are errors that a family and business must avoid if succession planning is going to work. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.